you guys, Flickers of Fear time, talking about a movie here that came out several years ago and got a huge amount of, you know, it was like really, really, you know, there was a lot of buzz around it. And, you know, I remember hearing a lot about it with a lot of people saying, oh, this is, you know, the best horror movie that came out in decades. And it was like one of the best movies of the, you know, 2010s or whatever you want to call it. And I think I saw it like a couple of years after it came out, after seeing like it hyped so much. And I remember liking it, but not really loving it. And I'd be like, yeah, that was good, I get it. But I was just kind of like, well, maybe that was like the hype was a little too much about it. But then I think I just kept coming back to it. I think there was something about the premise that I actually really liked about it. So I kept like rewatching it and rewatching it. And I think the more times I've rewatched it, I think I've seen it 4 or 5 times at this point, I think like the more I pick up in it, because there's a really lot going on in this movie. A lot of kind of visual cues, a lot of homages to older movies. You know, so there's kind of a lot of visual stuff going on, a lot of symbolism that you might not necessarily catch like the first time around. As I said, it's a simple premise, but in the sense of a lot of these kind of, like I said, I hate to use this term, but like elevated horror movies of the last few years, it could be read in several different ways, being like the monster, if you want to call it that, in this movie, which we'll get into in a minute. But you could read it in a couple of different ways. Like the monster could be symbolic of a lot of different things, or you could just watch it as just like a creepy, simple, you know, straightforward kind of throwback horror movie. So this is the movie It Follows. This came out back in 2014. I think it got its first premiere probably at Sundance, I feel like, and then it had like a limited release and then went into much wider release. It was directed by David Robert Mitchell. This was his second film. Interesting, it only cost, I think it cost less than $2 million. I think it cost less than $1.5 million. I think it was $1.3 million. And ended up making, after it went into wider release, like around the world, ended up making like about $23 million or more than that. So actually did very, very well. And it's very easy to see why, because there's just something very, this is not, I mean, it's not like the scariest movie I've ever seen, but it, you know, in the sense of, you know, jump scares or giving me nightmares or anything like that. But the thing that this movie does really well is that it just establishes this really like unrelenting sort of, but low key, feeling of dread like throughout the whole thing. Like, you know that you can't really escape from this, like there's really no way of escaping this curse or whatever it is you want to call it. So the whole movie is just kind of like, you're just kind of like tense, like, because you're kind of waiting, you know something bad's gonna happen, and it's kind of like, but and like I said, you're still trying to, you, like the whole time I was watching it, like your brain is going like, how could you even like stop this, how could you avoid it? Like, how could there ever be an end to it? And there really wouldn't be. I will say too, though, that one thing that I really like about the movie is that David Robert Mitchell has said that he got the idea for It Follows. He's like, not specifically, but he's like, when I was growing up, you know, when my parents divorced and stuff like that, I started having all these nightmares about being followed by a person. And they were like really, really creepy. And, you know, just really, there was just like somebody coming after me like unrelentingly. And I had a lot of dreams like that. So he's like, so I wanted to make a movie that tried to capture that feeling. And then like later on, he brought in the, you know, sexually transmitted disease angle, if you want to call it that. He's like, because that wasn't part of the original dreams, because he had them when he was younger. But he's like, so I just really wanted to capture that feeling of just being followed and not being able to like escape from it, like this anxiety, this constant like low-key anxiety all the time. And I think he did a really, really good job of capturing that in the movie, because that's exactly what this movie has. Now, as I said, it's almost kind of like a throwback, which a lot of really good horror movies lately have been. Interestingly, he chose to, it seems like it's set in the modern day, because one of the characters, Yara, I think her name is, she has like an e-reader that looks like a little makeup compact or like a birth control pill type of compact thing. And it looks like that. So it's obviously, and people have cell phones, so it's like obviously set in the modern day. But interestingly, I guess he shot it in Detroit. And so a lot of the houses or neighborhoods are really, really run down. A lot of the cars are old. A lot of the insides of the houses are, you know, have like old furniture. So everything like looks really old and rickety. And the characters seem like their clothes are not really modern. Like, you could wear that and like no one would think it was that weird. But they're also kind of like, they could be construed as being kind of like from the late 70s or early 80s, but not overtly so. So it gives the movie this kind of dreamlike, unstuck in time sort of thing, which I think really works to its advantage because you can't really pinpoint, you know, it's very location based for sure. Cause like I said, it's based around Detroit. So it's this kind of like, everything looks really run down and decrepit, but it's not really like pinpointed in any particular time period. So it's almost kind of like, I mean, because obviously John Carpenter was a big touchstone for this because some of the shots, like the way they're framed and everything like that, are pretty much exactly the way they were shot or framed in Halloween from 1978. So you can tell that he was homaging specific movies, you know, on purpose. I think also he said, like, with the cinematography, which is gorgeous in this, by the way, he uses, like, a lot of wide shots, a lot of really long takes, and it really is effective in, like, keeping this kind of anxiety or dread-inducing kind of feeling going. I think he said, too, that one of his inspirations for the cinematography, the way that it was shot, was the movie Paris, Texas, which, you know, you can see that as well. But like I said, very, very John Carpenter, very late 70s, kind of just this creepy, dread-inducing, like, slow burn sort of horror. And like I said, if you're going to make a low-budget horror movie, do something like this, because this is a really smart, it's a concept that doesn't need a lot of bells and whistles. There aren't a lot of, you know, there's not much CGI, there's not, like, a bunch of jump scares. There's a couple, but not really, you know, it's not really egregious. And it's just kind of like this, I mean, the thing about it is that the story is so great, the premise is so great, just this, you know, this constant sense of dread is great. And another thing, too, that I think is cool about this is that all the characters in it are just regular, likable people. Because I kind of feel like a lot of more mainstream or generic sort of horror movies, and some independent ones, too, they tend to make, especially if it's kind of like a slasher movie type of thing, which, this is kind of like a slasher movie. I guess you could, like, loosely say it was a slasher movie, even though it sort of has some supernatural elements, even though they're not really explained, but I think that's kind of a good thing. But I kind of feel like in a lot of slasher movies, you're almost kind of like, all the characters are sort of like archetypes, or they're all kind of dicks, because in various ways, because, you know, the audience comes there, like, to essentially root for the villain. You want to see the kills, you want to see like these assholes get fucked up, you know what I mean? But in this one, the characters are just so normal, and they're not, you know, they're not overtly just these horrible jerky, but they're just nice regular ass people. And so you actually kind of feel bad for them, like, when all this shit starts to happen, because it's like, holy crap, like, what would you do? You know, you're just a normal ass person trying to live your normal ass life, and like, all of a sudden this curse or whatever it is, you know, is kind of placed upon you through no action of your own, really, you know, through no fault of your own. And now you're being pursued, you're gonna die, you know, and all your other friends are involved and stuff like that. And it's just kind of like a hopeless situation. And I think the likability of the characters, the regular nature of the characters, them not being overly archetypal, or is like, oh, here's the slut, here's the dork, here's this, that, and the other. I think just making them just a group of regular ass people was really the right decision, because they just seem like relatable and they seem very likable. The opening shot of this, or the opening sequence of this movie, is so, so great, because it does a lot without much dialogue. I think that's another thing that I really like about this movie. Yes, there's dialogue in it, obviously, and there is kind of like, you know, a scene where the premise, the simple premise, is sort of explained. But a lot of this stuff is conveyed visually, which, sadly, even though movies are a visual medium, you don't really seem to see that much. I kind of feel like everything has to be like big exposition dump, like everybody like talking about things in the movie rather than showing things happening in the movie. But this really doesn't seem to have that problem. So the opening sequence is this girl, you don't really know her. Her name's Annie, if you look at the Wikipedia page. And she's basically just coming out of her house after, you're led to presume that she's had a date and she's like stayed over at this person's house, because she's kind of in like a sexy nightie or whatever, and she's got high-heeled shoes on. But she comes like running out of this house like in the dawn, you know, when it was in the morning, and she's obviously like freaking out and like scared, kind of looking behind her and shit like that. And she's kind of like running down the street, and people are asking, you know, hey, you need help or anything like that? She's like, no, it's fine. And so much is conveyed like through this sequence that, you know, it doesn't need to be explained because it's all visual. You're just kind of like sucked in immediately because you're like, what the hell is going on with this girl? So she's running down the street, and then finally she's like looking around. She doesn't see anything, so she goes back in the house, and then they show her later on and she's sitting out on the beach by herself and she's calling her parents. And she seems very upset, and she's telling them how much she loves them and everything like that. And then, like, the next scene, they cut to it, and she's obviously dead. Like, her leg is broken and, like, all backwards and all this other kind of stuff. So this opening sequence, like, says so much. Obviously, she knew someone was after her. We don't see who it is. We don't know what's going on. It's like, the first time I saw it, I think, well, I mean, I already knew the premise. But if you didn't know the premise, you know, at first you'd be like, oh, well, she's paranoid about something. And then the phone call that she gives, it's like, oh, you think, oh, maybe she's going to kill herself or anything like that. But then when they show the body, you're like, yeah, well, obviously she didn't do that to herself. So someone was after her and someone got her in the end. And so, like I said, that just couple minute sequence really, really sets everything up like really effectively. So after that happens, then we switch to our main protagonist, this girl named Jay. Her actual name's Jamie, I think, but they just call her Jay for short. And she's been dating this new guy named Hugh. They seem to be, you know, it's kind of a new thing, but they seem to like each other or whatever. And, you know, somebody asked her, like, one of her friends, she has a sister, and, like, the sister has a couple friends. They all kind of, like, hang out at the house together or whatever. The sister is kind of asking, oh, you know, have you and Hugh had sex yet? And she's like, no, not yet. You know, we'll think about it, whatever. So they go out on the date, you know, Hugh and Jay, and they go to this movie. And interestingly, they start playing this game where she basically says, me and my sister used to play this. You know, we imagined... We would pick a person in a crowd and like imagine what, like, would we want to trade places with that person, and like, why would we want to trade places with that person? And then the other person has to guess like which person you picked and why you want to trade places with them. So they kind of play this game, and then they're sitting in the movie theater, and she's going and she's like, okay, I picked a person. And then Hugh's trying to guess who it is, and he's like, oh, I bet you picked that girl in the yellow dress. And she turns around and she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? There's no girl in a yellow dress back there. And he's like, no, she's right there. And she doesn't see anything, at which point he starts getting like really weirded out. He's like, yeah, we gotta go, like, I really don't feel very well. So she's just kind of like, okay, whatever, like, he's acting really strange, everything like that. And again, you don't really know, like, what the fuck the deal is. Is he seeing things? Was there somebody there? And then they're gone. You don't really know. So then later on, they go out to this sort of abandoned, like, factory or whatever. And they're going to have sex in the car. And right after they have sex in the car, she's kind of like, you know, just hanging out, like, talking to him or whatever. He jumps on her and chloroforms her. At which point, you're kind of like, okay, now what the fuck is going on? So she wakes up, and he has strapped her to a wheelchair, like, inside the factory. And he's basically says, I'm sorry I had to do this, but I had to do this to prove to you that this is real. It's a curse. It follows you. This person can, whoever this person is that's following you, it can take any form that it wants to. It can be a stranger in a crowd. It can be someone you know. So it could look like your friend, it could look like your mom, it could look like anybody, but they're like, basically it will just keep walking toward you until you pass it to somebody else. The thing about it though is that, so he has passed it to her because they had sex, it's sexually transmitted. And the thing about it though is that if it kills the person that you passed it to, then it will come back and start going after you again. So it's us. So basically, the only way to get rid of it is just like to pass it on to somebody else, have them not get killed, and have them pass it on to somebody else until essentially you have so many degrees of separation that it's not going to come after you. But it's like I said, that's kind of like shitty, because even if you were kind of like, okay, well, I just got to go bang somebody else real quick and like fucking pass it to that person. But if you don't tell that person what's going on, then that person will inevitably get killed because they won't know what the fuck, like, somebody's just going to walk up on them and kill them. And then it's just going to come back to you anyway. So it's not like an easy thing where you can just pass it to somebody and be like, phew, you know, that's over. So it's like this really complex type of thing. And like I said, I like that simple premise. It's very easy to understand. It's not, and I like that he, you know, the director, David Robert Mitchell, he was basically like, I just wanted to make it like dream logic. It's like, it doesn't have to make sense. Is it a demon? Is it supernatural? It doesn't matter. It's just kind of like, like a nightmare. That's what he wanted to make. It's like a nightmare, but kind of set in reality. And so I really liked that the shit wasn't like over-explained. I liked that there wasn't this thing like, well, let's go back to the history and see where this demon first came from or anything like that. That's bullshit. And it's not important. You know, it's just scary because just like, basically you have sex with somebody that has this curse and now you have it. And basically you are going to get followed by various people and you won't know who they are. They'll just start walking right at you and you can't get rid of it. Like I said, even if you pass it to somebody else, if that person gets killed by the it, then it will come back and get you. You know, so you really, like I said, you can't really escape it. So obviously if Hugh had just told her this, she wouldn't have believed it. So that's why he was smart enough to essentially strap her to a chair and be like, okay, I'm going to prove it to you. So while they're at the factory, she's strapped to this wheelchair and a naked woman basically like starts walking right at her. And he's like, see, do you see it? And he can still see it too, even though he has passed it on to somebody else. Because that's, I guess once the curse has gone through you, you can see the person. But see, that's the thing. Nobody else can see it unless you have the curse right now or if you had it and then passed it to somebody else. So then like you can see the it that's coming at you, but nobody else can see it. So other people think you're like a lunatic because you just like see this person like coming at you and they're gonna kill you and you're just like, it's right there and nobody can see anything. So there's that thing too. Like she kind of thinks she's going nuts. So she has seen this naked woman, so she believes it. And so basically she has to go back to her house. Now this thing is like pursuing her in various forms. Like she's at school and like this creepy old woman like starts walking across the, you know, the campus like toward her window and she's like flipping out and everything. So she basically has to tell her friends and they don't believe her, but she sees like the it like coming at her in different forms in her house and they don't see it. But the interesting thing though is that even though they don't see it, I guess like the it can do like, if it does physical things, like it breaks a window or at one point, like it pulls her up by the hair, like nobody around her can see the it. They can't see the person, but they can see the effect that the person is having on her. Like they can see the hair being pulled up. They just can't see like who it is that's doing it. So at this point, she tries to go back and get more answers from Hugh, at which point she finds out that Hugh is not the dude's real name. He was actually at the school, like, or he had changed his name. He was rented a house under like false pretenses. So she does a little bit of sleuthing and they find out what the dude's actual name is. Like his name is Jeff and he'd gone to this other school. And so they go back to him and try to get more answers, but he just like flips out. He's like, hey, look, I just got it from this one night stand girl. I don't know anything else to tell you. We shouldn't even be in the same area, you know, get the fuck away from me. So there's that kind of whole thing too. So basically most of the movie is Jay trying to avoid getting killed by this thing. And also she has a couple of friends, like one guy that lives next door. And then there's this one dude named Paul who I guess he was like a neighbor. And they had grown up together. Like, you know, he had hung out at their house all the time when they were all kids. And Paul has always kind of like carried a torch for her. So there's this whole thing too, where some of the guys, like one of the guys that is like the sort of bad boy, like the sort of the neighbor, he kind of gets involved in the shit too. Because, you know, she's acting weird one day out in the yard and like he tries to see what's going on. And when she actually, they try to run away, they go out to like this remote lake house and it's, you know, there's all this kind of shit where it still finds her and she takes off in a car and crashes it and has to go to the hospital. Now, while she's in the hospital, the bad boy, who I think his name is Greg, but I think he doesn't actually believe her completely because like I said, he can't see the it. He can't see the person. And even though he sees like what appears to be sort of like poltergeist activity, like I said, because you can still see, you know, shit happening around that you just can't see the person, but he doesn't really seem to believe it. So he has sex with her in the hospital, like consensually. She doesn't, you know, she's not unconscious or anything like that. Because, you know, he's like, I guess, well, oh, well, I'll take it on. I can handle it or whatever. But I don't think he entirely believes that it's going to happen. And it's weird because it almost seems like the curse isn't going to affect him because he comes back and he says, yeah, it's been 3 days and I haven't seen anything. But it turns out the curse gets him in the end. Anyway, he gets killed. So then the curse ends up regressing back to Jay, at which point, you know, she has to, like, again, figure out how they're gonna get rid of it. And what they decide to do, I guess this seems very strange. I kind of like that there's no scene where... I like that there's no scene of, like, investigating, like, the history of the it, like, of the demon or whatever. They're just kind of like, okay, well, this is the situation. How are we going to get out of it? That's because there's nothing you could really do, like I said, other than, like, humping somebody else or just, like, running away from it every time you see it, you know, and hope that it doesn't catch up with you, you know what I mean? So it's that kind of thing. There's not really a lot you can do to stop it. But there's no scene where they come up with this plan, because with the plan that they come up with is they're like, well... let's, once it goes back to Jay, it's like, let's put her, like, they go to this, like, a sports center or the school or whatever, and they go into, like, this place where the big swimming pool is, and they're like, let's put her in the middle of the swimming pool, like, as bait, and then when the it comes, like, to get her, like, we'll see it when it goes into the water, and then she'll jump out real quick, and then we'll throw a bunch of electrical shit, like, a bunch of appliances and shit in the water and electrocute it, because apparently... It's not real clear, like I said, because it's like supernatural pretty much, because at one point she shoots one of the its that's coming after her that's actually taken the form of Yara, and it does fall down, but then it gets back up again. So they're kind of presuming, well, maybe we can destroy it because, you know, what else are you going to do, right? So it's, you got to try something. So they kind of do that, but it doesn't really work out as well. It's kind of, well, it seems like they destroy it. I like, too, that there's one point where they're trying to, because like I said, she's the only one that can see it. So she's in the pool going, it's like, right there, it's right there. And like, they just, so the dude's like shooting at it and he's like, he can't see it. And at one point, I think they like toss a sheet over it. So it's there. It's just like invisible to everybody that doesn't have the curse. So when they put the sheet over it, it, you know, there is like a figure there that they can shoot at and all this other kind of stuff. So it does seem that like they have it in the pool and they like they shoot at it and it's like they, and it seems like it works because like the pool like fills with blood and everything like that. So they don't really know, but it's not really clear if the it was destroyed. Because like I said, I don't really know if it can be destroyed. As I said, this is sort of like, you know, the movie, it's not, it's like has nightmare logic. So after that happens, her and Paul, you know, the childhood friend that has had a crush on her all this time, now they have sex. So if this is still around, it'll be after him now. But like I said, but he knows about it. So now if he gets killed, then it'll come back to her or whatever. But now it turns out that the last shot of the movie, which I really, really like, is Jay and Paul just like walking down the street hand in hand. And there's like in the distance, like behind them, there's like a figure following them. Now, it could just be a random ass person or it could be the it. We're not entirely sure what it is. But see, the interesting thing about this, like I said, I kind of feel like because the curse, the demon, whatever you want to call it, is sexually transmitted, a lot of people like compared it to, oh, it's like a sexually transmitted disease. Which I guess you could call it that, but honestly, watching it, I was kind of like, I don't even think it's that specific. I think the it just represents death or aging or something like that. It's just something that's always there. It's always creeping up on you and it's gonna get you like in the end, whether you like it or not. So, which is kind of like a, you know, the pretty scary premise if you think about it. So I don't even think it's as specific as, and I don't even think it's as specific as, because I know a lot of slasher movies are kind of like, you know, punish teenagers for having sex type of thing, like, or being promiscuous. So that's another thing I like about this movie too, is that they didn't really make an issue, like he didn't make an issue of the characters being slutty or anything like that. They were just having sex like a normal person would have, you know what I mean? It wasn't like a big, huge deal, you know, and it's like no one was slut shamed or anything like that. It was just like a regular part of life. There was this risk of this of catching this thing and like not being able to get rid of it. But like I said, I don't even know. I don't know. Like, from my point of view, I think the it was, like, symbolic, like I said, of aging or death. You know what I mean? It's because it's always, like, creeping up on you. It's slow. Like, it doesn't run. And they even say that at the beginning. It's like, it just walks, but it'll find you, like, in the end. If you drive far away, eventually, like, it will get to you. And like I said, it'll take a different form. During the course of the movie, it turns up as, like, friends of hers. It turns up as her dead dad. It turns up as, you know, her neighbor's mom. It turns up as, like, different people. And it turns up as strangers as well. So that's the thing. You never know. So like I said, that's why to me it seems like it represents death, because it's kind of like, one, it's always out there. It's always coming at you. And it's always going to get you in the end. But also, you don't know when it's going to get you. You don't know what to expect. You know what I mean? You don't know what form it's going to take. So to me, that was kind of like, so it was kind of like a bigger statement about that. I really, really like, and I mean, I think I've brought this up before, but I really, really like these low key, kind of just creepy, dread inducing, kind of anxiety ridden sort of movies. Like I said, you don't need jump scares. You don't need CGI. You don't really like special effects. There's just something really, really creepy about being somewhere and, like, just not feeling safe, because you never know when this person's just gonna, like, just a random ass person is just gonna start, like, walking at you. And, you know, and like I said, there's really no way to get rid of it. There's no way out of it. Even if you pass it on to somebody else, it's like, you know, you never know if that person's gonna get killed in a few days and then it's gonna come back after you again. So it's just, you're kind of like fucked either way. So I really, really like that sort of unrelenting, and it's just kind of, it's low key, but it's like really, really unrelenting. And I really, really like that. Like I said, I love the shot compositions of this are great. The fucking framing and everything. Very, very retro, very throwback, but it has its own style as well. So I just really, really like that. Also got to give a shout out to the fucking score by Disasterpiece, which is amazing. Very, very reminiscent of late 70s, early 80s horror movies, which reminded me of, like, John Carpenter or, like, giallo movies or something like that. Just that kind of, like, synthy kind of score. It was like, I really, really like that. And I really like, too, I think, if I'm remembering it correctly, that I think there's only, like, a lot of music or, like, this kind of relentless, like, synthy music when the it is somewhere, like, in the vicinity. So it's just, it's so great, because it's one of those movies that, because you never know what form it is going to take, you're always, like, watching the perimeter or the frame. It's like, who's that person back there? Who's that person? And they even, like, they even use that. Like, some of the characters would be like, you know, there'd be, like, a person walking toward them. It's like, who's that? Do you see that person? You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, we see that person. So that's, like, a real person. But that's what's so cool about it, is that you don't know what form it's going to take. You don't know what it looks like. So it could be anybody. It could just be, like, lurking around in the background, and then suddenly it comes walking at you. And it's just, like, there's something just so simple and primal, but also something really creepy about that. And I think it was really, really effectively done. So I can see why this got such a massive, you know, just massive buzz when this came out, and is still cited as one of the best horror movies of the 2010s, which I would agree with as well. It's, like I said, if you don't like slow burn horror movies, you don't like retro movies, if you like something that's more like action packed and shit like that, then yeah, you probably are not going to dig it too much, because it is very lo-fi. It is very low-key, but to me, that kind of just makes it creepier. It's just, and it's, even though, and I like that it has this sort of, like, grounded in reality, but also, like, this sort of vaguely nightmarish feel to it as well. And like I said, I think it helps, too, that the mythology of the It is not really explained, and I don't think it needs to be, and I think the movie is a lot better for not explaining it, because, like I said, it's a very simple, easy-to-understand premise. You don't need to complicate it. You don't need to, like, fucking, you know, like I said, you don't need to, like, investigate it or anything like that. It's just, like, a problem. This thing is coming after you. What are you going to do? You know, where are you going to go? How are you going to fix it? And that's basically all they do. They don't need to, like, mythologize or over-explain or anything like that. And I think that's really, really great. It's just kind of just a very, very simple premise, and it's just very, very effective. So this movie, if you have not seen it, probably I just spoiled all of it, but that's okay. That's what I usually do. That's what I do. This is actually available. I thought it was available on Hulu, but I think you have to have, like, one of the expensive add-ons if you want to watch it. However, I believe you can watch it on Pluto TV for free. I actually rented it on Amazon Prime for $3.99. So there's various places you can see it. And I really, really do recommend it if you like this sort of slow burn retro type of horror, particularly from, like, the 2010s, which there was a lot of them kind of like that, and I think this is easily one of the best ones. So if you haven't seen it, definitely check out It Follows from 2014, and I will see you guys on the next Flickers of Fear. Bye.